His vast collection of rare and odd leaf artifacts is the subject of a book called Written in Blue and White by Greg Oliver. This thing is outstanding. It's breathtaking, honestly. Alan Stitt joins us along with Hockey Hall of Fame Director of Public Affairs and former Leaf Ron Ellis here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Alan, Ron, thank you both for hopping on to tell us about the book. And first off, Alan, you're one of hockey's leading collectors. Where did this passion come from?
Well, by the way, hello, how are you?
Good to have you.
I've been a fan for a long time, and I almost fluked into collecting. I happened to find it was actually a stick that Paul Henderson used in the 72 series. I saw that it was for sale, and I was a huge fan of the series, and I picked it up and got hooked. And then I got into documents, and it became even more fun.
Well, I'll say some fluke. It's impressive. And author Greg Oliver, Ron, interviewed trainers, agents, reporters, publicists, former GMs like Jim Gregory, Jerry McNamara, Floyd Smith, players such as yourself, Dick Duff, Daryl Sittler. What was that discussion like for you, Ron?
Well, of course, I'm very happy for my friend Alan and this book. As you said, Jeff, it's a wonderful book, and I was really happy to be part of it. I think what the book does with the older documents, older contracts, it just gives the hockey fan a real chance to look at the history of a game from a whole different perspective. And I think I have a document in there that has to do with training camp, being invited to training camp. And I think when folks have a chance to read that, they're going to say, holy man, is that all they did back then?
Alan, such a rare documents found in the book. And honestly, we could spend hours talking about this, but just cherry picking a few. We look at the one where Conn Smythe asked construction workers to sign when they were building Maple Leaf Gardens to agree to take Maple Leaf Gardens shares rather than cash for their work during the Depression. Alan, the fact that you got your hands on that is just outstanding.
And it was also a fluke because...
Again?
Yeah, it was. Well, actually, I had bought a bunch of old documents from the Maple Leaf Gardens files at an auction. And they weren't particularly significant documents, but one of the documents was an old water bill from I think 1933. And I flipped over it was just handwritten, this water bill. I flipped over the back of the paper, and there was this agreement between Maple Leaf Gardens and their contractors about taking shares in return for the work they're doing to build Maple Leaf Gardens. And as you can imagine, my eyes popped out of my head. I couldn't believe this. It's such a cool document.
There's a contract clause shown in the book telling players that they had to leave a deposit of $30 for their uniform at the beginning of the season. Ron, did that happen in your era?
No, it didn't happen in my era. We never got to keep our jerseys back then. Mr. Ballard would take our jerseys back and hand them down to the Marlies each year. I would have been happy to pay $30 to keep a jersey and pay the fine.
Well, so back then you couldn't do that? You couldn't keep the jersey? Because I thought back then in the NHL you were allowed to, but then again, Terrell Ballard we're talking about.
Oh, no. They were very frugal back then. The only time you got to keep a jersey is when you retired.
I see.
So, Jeff, just to give you a sense of the era, though, Ron was talking about his invitation to training camp, and it talks about how you have to be in shape,
yep.
And that means no more than 7 pounds above your weight that you finished the season with, and you have to be in shape. So it says you have to be able to do 25 push-ups, 25 sit-ups, and 30 knee bends.
Ah, wow.
That was Punch's view of what was in shape.
Vigorous, huh? I bet, Ron, you had the vigorous training camp regimen for you.
Oh, my goodness. The other stipulation was we had to bring our golf clubs to training camp, and Punch made sure that we didn't ride golf carts. We had to walk the golf course. But we trained quite hard. We were on the ice twice a day and pushed hard. But back then, Jeff, training camp was 6 weeks long, and so players would come to camp to get into shape. Today, yeah. they have to be in shape
That's
on
right.
the first day of camp. Much different culture. Most of us had jobs in the off season, and we didn't work out a great deal. Lifting weights was something no one even considered back then. When I first joined the Leafs, there wasn't a weight room. There wasn't a weight anywhere. It just wasn't part of the sport culture at that time. And, of course, now to compete at the high level, the guys train year-round.
Well, and some players, Ron, might have had jobs in the off-season, right?
Exactly. Most of us had jobs. We had to.
That's right.
We were paid fairly for that time, but we all knew we would have second careers. And to my mind, I think I'm speaking for most of the guys, we used the game of hockey, the game we loved to play, as a stepping stone to a new career. And so you worked in the off season, you experimented with different things just to see what you might want to do when your playing days were over.
Yeah, it's amazing what a different time. We're talking about the book Written in Blue and White. Alan Stitt, a hockey collector, and of course the great Ron Ellis joining us on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm Jeff Salmon. Alan, what's the story behind the tongue-in-cheek invitation to Eddie Shack?
Well, as some people may know, Eddie and Punch were always fighting. They seem to constantly battle. Actually, there's one document in there where Eddie Shack gets a fine for $50 for being out after curfew, and you think, okay, well, that's no big deal, until you realize it says on December 25th. So just to give you a sense of the way they were. So Eddie wouldn't always, well, Ron would know better than I would because Ron was there, but Eddie wouldn't always do the things that Punch wanted him to do. So there's this invitation to Eddie Shack where instead of the same invitation that Ron gets, the formal invitation, this invitation says, Dear Eddie, if it's not too much trouble or too great an inconvenience for you, I would deem it a great pleasure if you could honor us with your presence at training camp any time between September 15th and September 30th. Hope you can fit this into your schedule and kindly let me know what times you would be available to practice.
Passive-aggressive much? My goodness. Oh, my goodness. Now, Alan, you had... you have documents in there with the fines levied to Shaq, Mahovlich. How about the $100 fine behind Wally Stanikowski's in 1945?
Yeah, Wally Stanowski.
Stanowski, excuse me.
Yeah, and it's in those days the there was no players' association, of course. So the coach or the GMs could basically they decided when they're going to fine the players. They're not happy with someone and they fine them. And, I mean, Ron would know a lot better than I would, of course, but that's basically how it went. No, Ron?
Yes, absolutely. There's a great story Pete Mahovlich tells back when he was with the Canadians. Scotty Bowman would, if the guys were late coming in, he'd fine them $50. So the story goes, I guess Pete went up to Scotty and said, here's my $50, see you in the morning.
My goodness. That's fantastic. Ron, ever get any of these kind of fines? Did that ever happen to you?
Well, just a couple of times. I don't even recall them all. I think there was a couple of bench clearings back in the old days, and they used to fine everybody that went over the boards. And there weren't too many for myself that I recall. Mm.
There's one in here about for Frank Mahovlich when Punch fines Frank for indifferent play. And he says, you consistently give the puck away in your own zone, and I hope this fine will teach you not to do it anymore.
Mm. Well, hey, money is the great motivator, is it not?
That's right.
Ron, I wanted to ask you both about this as well, just to step away from the book just for a moment. You were both in Dallas for Mike Modano being honored as a new member of the Hall of Fame. What was that like? Alan, let's start with you.
Oh, it's a fantastic experience. They put on a great show where Eddie Belfour and Brett Hull and Joe Noondijk were all there, along with Ron, on the ice yeah. to honor Mike Modano and congratulate him for getting into the Hall of Fame. He really made hockey in Dallas, and it was a beautiful ceremony.
Ron, does this stuff ever get old for you?
No, it doesn't get old. I was a real fan of Mike Modano, for example, and I really appreciated the way he played the game, and I didn't like him too much when he played with Team USA, however, but it was an honor to go down on behalf of the Hall of Fame to be part of that ceremony, and he's a very likable guy, very, very humble, and it was wonderful to see the interaction between Newendike, Val Thorpe, Brett Hull, and Mike, of course. There's a real bond there from the days they all played together and the success that they had, and that certainly brought back a lot of memories for me, the same bonds that you form when you're on a Stanley Cup team or when I had the opportunity to play with Team Canada. I mean, those bonds last forever. It was very interesting to see them interacting.
Ron, also have to make a quick reference to this, the passing of a great hockey man in Pat Quinn. I know you got to know him quite well.
Yes, Patty was a teammate of mine and a great teammate.
Yeah.
And it was always nice to look behind me when I was on the ice and I could see Pat Quinn back there on defense at 6'3", 220 or whatever. And he played the game hard. He wasn't an instigator, but he was certainly a guy that would be there for his teammates, and we all respected him for that. But I recall, the time that I did spend with him after a game on the bus, if I was sitting with him or if we're on the plane, he always seemed to want to talk about the game and analyze the game. And I said to myself, this guy is going to be a great coach one day. Wow. And lo and behold, I believe he had a Hall of Fame career as a coach. And then, of course, he did so much more for hockey, international hockey, when he brought the gold back to Canada after 50 years.
Very fortunate that we could have him represent Canada, and also a few times with the Toronto Maple Leafs. We were very lucky to have him. Guys, this is a fantastic book. I love it. Written in blue and white. Every Leaf fan out there has to have this book. There's just no doubt about it. Through this collection, you could look back at the history of the Toronto Maple Leafs over the last century, written in blue and white, written by Greg Oliver, who did an outstanding job on the incredible Leaf collection of Alan's Dead. Alan, Ron Ellis, thanks so much for joining us, strolling down memory lane, and especially doing so in the book. It's a treasure. Thanks for this.
Pleasure.
Great to be with you, Jeff.
Thank you, guys. There's Alan Stitt and Ron Ellis.